of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, please stay tuned to kptz.org. Our website is more than a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's going on around town. You can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure, listen to today's shows as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who was that young woman wearing the latest, the very latest, in jean shorts? No, she didn't have artfully ripped jeans. She had cute little white ruffles sticking out of the hem of her very short and very tight jean shorts. Ripped jeans are so over. And so, who is Oma? I see her colorfully painted RV around town all the time. It's called Oma's Place, and it's a lovely little RV palace. And who are the people chowing down on hot dogs at Dogs Afoot? Tourists? Locals? Or perhaps a bit of both? Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile a few of the singular personalities who live here. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers, the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Steve Hegel, who together with his wife, Amy Recker, is the owner of PT's Paddle Sports. They rent kayaks, paddleboards, bicycles, umbrellas, and who knows what else. So, Steve, you were actually a guest on the show 3 years ago. At that point, you and Amy were only 2 years into your ownership of PT Paddle Sports. I'm sure a lot has changed, but before we get there, let's go back a little bit. Are you a local boy, born and bred in the Olympic Peninsula?
Oh, no, Marianne, and thank you for having me here today. I was born in Davenport, Iowa. Right on the banks of the muddy Mississippi River, the only place where the Mississippi River runs east to west. And then my dad got a job in the Bay Area, and we moved to California.
How old were you?
I was 5 years of age, yeah.
Okay, well then I guess I sort of count you as a California boy.
Yeah, kind of like that, but we were raised very Iowan. In the 60s, in the Bay Area, we were Iowa kids trying to live with all these hippies and all that kind of stuff.
So I always like to ask people about their high school experience. Mm-hmm. More specifically, kids always label each other. They say, he's a band geek, she's a nerd, whatever. What do you think they said about you?
Yeah, I think probably a jock, but with long hair. My baseball coach said, Hegel, you need a haircut, man. Well, this is the style.
So were you one of these kids who had it firmly in your head what you were going to be when you grew up?
No, I did not. The only thing I knew is I wanted to play baseball, but I didn't have the tools for that. I wasn't big enough, tall enough, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of gave up on that and went on my bicycle. And I tried to be a bike rider for a while, and then that didn't work out. I had knee issues, so I had to find another sport that I liked that could get me out there. And I saw an article in the paper, said kayaking, like backpacking out on the ocean. I said, wow.
That sounds like fun.
That sounds like a whole lot of fun and something I could do and wouldn't involve my knees so much.
Were you still a teenager when you got into that?
No, I was 30. Huh. Yes, 30 years of age. I thought I was old.
what were you doing to support yourself during that era?
Oh, I was painting. painting contractor, doing a lot of individual homes in the Bay Area where you can do that a lot.
So when you first discovered kayaking, you were in the Bay Area. So did you go out in the Pacific? Was that...
Yeah, that was an interesting transition for me in that I thought I was going to go out on the Gossamer Sea with a big floppy hat on and all that kind of stuff. And the place I learned was in Santa Cruz, California, which is right along the ocean, the edge of the ocean. And where I learned that on the edge of the ocean, we have a thing called the impact zone, which is where the surf meets the sand. And my first instructor, Dennis Judson, thank you, Dennis, told me that if I wanted to get out there on Gossamer Seas, I was going to have to learn and to love that impact zone, the surf zone. I had to learn and love that, the surf.
Well, so Santa Cruz is certainly known for being a surfer town.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But those guys are standing up on their boards, and we weren't quite really accepted very well.
Did you move to Santa Cruz?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, you had to be there. You couldn't commute, right?
Yeah, I had to move to Santa Cruz. Got into surfing, competitive surfing. From there, I could get out onto my Gossamer Seas and see all the wildlife, the whales going by.
How were you paying the bills during that era?
I was transitioning from the painting, and then I went into working at the Adventure Sports as a kayak guide.
Ah, well, that's fun.
It was a lot of fun because I volunteered, basically. They couldn't get rid of me. I was like, yo, come on. And I had a truck. That was my saving grace. Hey, yeah. Steve, you got a truck? You can take all these kayaks. Come on.
Got the truck? You're in.
You're in.
Well, the guiding that you were doing in that area, were the people who signed up for it, are they experienced people or were you getting a bunch of neophytes?
No. Back then in the late 80s, early 90s, it was a hot market for kayaking and a lot of people hadn't experienced it before, and we were of the mindset that we needed to train these people adequately. And with Dennis's tutelage, we had to get them trained safely in that surf zone. So we specialized in taking people out into the surf. Whether they expected that or not, that's what we gave them.
I've seen some people kayaking without wearing any sort of life jacket. And I've often wondered why would
they
do that.
You're scaring me now.
Yeah,
you're scaring me.
You don't go for that sort of thing.
No, no. Safety is no accident, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to be well prepared. Life jacket, depending on the environment that you're in. But the life jacket is the number one thing,
yeah.
The Coast Guard says.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
You've got to have it. Well, I don't want to scare anybody, but you will drown before you die of hypothermia because all your blood goes to your core. You cannot swim if you don't have a life jacket on. Don't want to scare people,
but it's very important.
I want to inform the public. That's why it's so important to wear
so
that.
So how long did you end up being in Santa Cruz?
10 years, where I met my wife, Amy.
I believe you told me you met Amy in a swimming pool.
That's another one, thanks to Dennis. Yeah, she was a student of mine, and I broke all the rules, the American Canoe Association. I'm sorry about that, guys.
Terrible.
You're not supposed to fraternize with the students. Sometimes you just got to break the rule.
She graduated quickly anyhow, right?
Yeah.
She was
already a kayak guide up here in the San Juans, but she said, I just want to meet more kayakers in the Santa Cruz area.
So you said you were in Santa Cruz for about 10 years. What made you decide to leave there? It's a pretty cool town.
It's a really cool town, but the water is even better, I'm telling you. We were living in a redwood grove kind of down there, and a redwood tree fell down across the creek, across the road, across our front yard, into the neighbor's yard, and just barely missed our house.
Whoa.
As Amy was changing a diaper.
Ooh.
And suffered a little bit of PTSD from that. She said the noise really got to her.
It scared her.
Yeah, it did. If you get scared of the trees, you got to move out of the woods.
Yeah, so that's logical.
So we had to move out of the wood. We went out to Logan, Utah to see how the other half lives.
Right.
And that was an interesting thing without the salt water around us.
There are lakes out there, aren't there?
There was the Great Salt Lake, and that's a horse of a different color, I'll tell you that right now. It doesn't have the wildlife in it. You know, here you could see a whale at any time. Down in Santa Cruz, you could see sharks, too, at any time. But the life around our Salish Sea up here is tremendous. So
You actually kayak on the Salt Lake, the Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, I did. I went out to an island. A friend of mine, who's a bit of a historian in Logan, took me out to an island out there. And it had a cross etched into a rock. Kit Carson was on this trip with John C. Fremont and carved a cross in the rock. And it's still there today.
Wow.
That was an interesting. But once you see that, yeah.
Well, how'd you pick Utah? Well, was there logic there?
Oh, yes, there was. There was a free place to stay.
Gotcha. Yeah,
my sister-in-law was taking a sabbatical down to Adelaide, Australia, and needed a house sitter for a year. So, hey.
Yeah, hey.
We can do that.
That's a good deal.
Free,
you know. Gives you time to think about what you're going to do next.
And beautiful country.
Yeah.
It was beautiful country. But like I say, it wasn't the ocean. You know, even though the Great Salt Lake was there.
Were you still teaching kayaking up there?
No. Mainly getting into construction and more painting.
Okay. So your year was up, and you're thinking, where are we going next?
We spent more like 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, our year was up, and we spent 3 years. And then it just got to be that we needed to make a move. We had a friend here in town. She said, why don't you come on out of here? So we came out and checked it out and you know, Marianne, this place is beautiful.
It is.
You know
it
that,
is.
Right?
So you came and checked it out and decided this was it.
Yeah, this was a great place.
What year was that?
For our kids. It was 10 years ago.
2009, 2008, you know, the big crash was happening. Did you have a job lined up when you first came to Port Townsend?
That's what my realtor asked me. First thing is like, oh, that's great. You're moving here. You got a job, kid? I go, well, how hard could that be? I soon discovered that everybody here in town has like two or three jobs, and that's
typical.
That's what I'm doing now. I do a little bit of painting now for the county. I work as a custodian up at the new Salish Coast School at nights. And then we have our business, Port Townsend Paddle Sports, out at Fort Wharton State Park.
Okay. And when you bought PT Paddle Sports, that was in 2014?
14. Yeah.
That would be about right.
Yeah.
So what's the scope of the business? You have that stand down at the Fort Wharton State Park, down by the
Marine Science Center.
Yeah. And we see the kayaks there and everything. So what do you rent?
We rent kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, bicycles, umbrellas for people, and now beach chairs, too.
Oh, I didn't know about the beach chairs. In addition to renting equipment, you also do some guiding.
Yes, I do guide for people from all over the world that come here. It's amazing.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating characters who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is the owner of PT Paddle Sports. And I know you've had big groups at times that do overnight trips around here. Can you tell me a bit about that?
We've done overnight trips over to Fort Flagler with a big group. That's always interesting, crossing across over from Port Townsend with the ferry boats and all the other traffic. One of the interesting things on those trips is that we do a night paddle where the bioluminescence comes alive. They're tiny creatures that light up with a kind of green essence. When you dip your paddle in the water, there's a ring around there that glows. And,
wow.
And you can follow the trail as you go along. And if there's a school of fish that come right underneath you, you just see it go right underneath.
That's really
you
cool.
With the bioluminescence kind of trailing behind them.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's otherworldly.
When you get people coming down there to rent kayaks, are most of them already experienced kayakers, or do you have a lot of newbies?
For the most part, people will say that they have a little experience with that little bit of hesitation. So you have to reschool them and make sure that they know what they're doing and how to do it and how.
Do you have certain ground rules in terms of age? For example, if I want to take my 2-year-old with me, can I take my 2-year-old with me?
Well, 2-year-olds, they're a little bit too young. If people want to put them on their laps, and that will create a safety problem, because if you have a 2-year-old on your lap, it's very hard to paddle safely with somebody in your lap.
Right.
So the 2-year-old could get hurt. The other thing is dogs. People want to take their small dogs on board, and that's one of my hard and fast rules.
If
the dog falls overboard or jumps out for some reason, the owner will reach over to grab it and pick it up, and now maybe we have 2 creatures in the water, and that's not a good situation.
Right, right. In terms of equipment, do you insist that everyone on one of your boats has safety?
We have the safety vests, you know, the life jackets, personal flotation devices. We have extra paddle floats on board, and also a bilge pump. But the real key to safety around here is staying close to shore. Because if something were to happen, then you could just take your boat into shore and get out, empty the water out, warm up, and get back in and have more fun. But if you're out in the middle of the straits, you're going to get taken whichever way the moon happens to be pulling you at that time.
You must have to really watch the weather, the tides.
Yes, I do. Like a hawk, I have my weather apps. But the key is just observation. What's going on right now? Because these apps that you get on your phone and on your computer, it doesn't tell you what's happening right here, right now. So you have to be aware all times when people are out on the water.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time out on the water yourself and
yes,
also
I do.
Watching the water.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to talk a little bit more about what you've been doing in addition to renting and supervising kayakers, because you've been doing some adventuring yourself.
Oh, the races?
Yes.
You want to talk about the races?
Yes.
Okay, we're off. My wife and I just successfully completed the 7048 race, which, if people don't know, is a race from Tacoma, Washington, right here to Port Townsend. And when they threw down that challenge, it's like, this is my town. I got to be there. And then my wife says, hey, can I do that too?
So you were in a double kayak.
A double kayak together.
Wow.
Yeah. Some people call them divorce boats.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that.
But this was a very bonding experience for the two of us.
So where did you, I presume you overnighted somewhere. Most everyone who did that race did. Where did you spend your sleepover?
Okay. Well, our first sleepover, we spent 2 nights on the water. Was it Blake Island?
Uh-huh.
It's a small island just off of West Seattle.
I understand there are a lot of raccoons on that island.
Well, I never saw one.
Oh, well,
I'll
that's
tell
good.
You that right now. But everybody was warning us, look out for the raccoons, the killer raccoons. They'll eat everything, including your boat. So we spent an hour there. When you get out of your boat, you should tie up your boat.
Good plan.
Yeah, it's a really good plan.
But you were tired?
Yeah, I was very tired. We got out, we pulled our boat up, and we were just so tired that we put our sleeping bags out and went to sleep from 5 feet away from our boat. You know, what could go wrong, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, God. It's a little embarrassing for me to tell this story. 2 a.m. and at 3 a.m. I woke up just to, you know, kind of wake up and look out and see the boat. The boat is gone.
Oh,
Mary.
My God. Oh,
the
no.
The boat was gone. The sickest feeling I ever did feel is like, where's our boat? And Amy woke right up, too. It was like, where's our boat? And for 5 minutes, it seemed like an eternity. I was looking up the beach, you know, and then somebody said, well, the tide's going that way. 20 yards down the road, our boat was just lapping up along the shoreline.
Oh, and, you are lucky.
We were very lucky. Amy pumped out all the water. There must have been a passing tanker that went by that they put out these big waves, put a lot of water into the cockpits of our boat. So we emptied that out and and set back out and said, wow, we'll never do that again.
You had too much adrenaline going to go back to sleep, I guess.
Exactly correct. So that was our first night. And then we did a little daytime sleep at Fay Bainbridge, at the very top part of Fay Bainbridge. Took a little sleep there just to rest up before a little crossing that we have there. And then we had heard through the grapevine from some of the other racers that there was a place to get hamburgers in Hansville, right by Point No Point, top of the Kitsap Peninsula. And boy, we were paddling like there was no tomorrow because we want to get there before they close. So we got
the lure of the hamburger.
Oh, that was the best hamburger ever. I can't, at the Hans Grill. That was a great stop. And then after that, we spent a night from 2 to 3 at Foul Weather Bluff, right before we crossed over the Hood Canal. And then the tide, who that waits for no one, right, came in. And again, we had our boat tied up at that
That's
point.
Good. That's good.
But when the boat is kind of bouncing on the shore from these the tanker wakes, it was time to go.
Yeah.
So at 3 a.m., we took off from there and crossed the Hood Canal. We had a fishing boat come up behind us in the fog and kind of touch and go there for a second, but they missed us. Then came in the fog to Port Townsend.
Oh, you made it.
Yeah,
yay.
We made it. Yes, well, all the way. 36:17 was our time.
Okay. Congratulations.
We didn't take the full 48 hours to do it.
Okay. So in addition to doing the 70-48, which is a race from Tacoma to Port Townsend, I believe you have also done the part that goes from Port Townsend to Victoria.
The first stage of the race to Alaska.
Right.
Yes, R2AK.
Did you do that this year, or was that?
I entered it three times, 2015, 2016, and I finally made it on 2017, thanks to another paddling partner, Kelly Watson, who was successful at talking my wife into letting me go on it that year. And we did a lot of training for that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, people don't think about it, but you need to really train for these races and
well, that's the exciting
be prepared.
Part. You know? That's the exciting part is the training. In addition to getting in shape, when you're training in a kayak, you're out there in the environment.
Right.
And you're seeing whales go by and the birds, the puffins, just the beauty around you, the gossamer seas that I talked about earlier.
Well,
I finally got to them.
You know, in addition to the racing, the people who are renting the kayaks, they actually do see a lot of wildlife. Isn't there an eagle's nest somewhere near the fort?
Well, that was true. Until last year, Marianne.
They moved.
In August, they had to.
Yeah.
My eagle expert tells me they build these nests so big, can be up to 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
It gets so big that the branch that it's on can't handle it anymore. So it came down. But the good news is the eagles are still hanging out. But they found a new tree to inhabit.
I always like going down and seeing the eagles and the otters. And this time of year, the little tiny baby otters.
The little baby otters that we just experienced like a week ago or something. You pointed them out to me. They were very cute, but
you wouldn't want to get close to them.
Well, I'm thinking of those eagles soaring overhead. That looks like a really nice meal. Wow.
Well, I hope not.
When people come to Port Townsend Paddle Sports, that's the kind of thing I ask everybody. Hey, come back. And all I ask is bring me back a story. One time we had an eagle come down and get a snake. It was bringing a snake back to the babies back at the nest when we had that.
Wow.
It was interesting to watch. It looks like a stick, but the stick was moving all around like a snake would.
So you've done a few different things as you've, you know, grown the business. You're doing something at Glass Beach, right?
Oh, yeah. We do a Glass Beach tour that people just love. Why walk the 2.5 miles down to McCurdy Point when you can sit on your derriere and paddle down there? And we also try to time it with the tides and the currents. Two different things. But anyway, the current, we hope to catch it going, ebbing out as we go down. We get out of our kayaks, have a lunch down there, and collect the Glass Beach. And then we get back in our boats with the flood tide and take it on back. It's one of the highlights of my summer.
So your business is pretty seasonal, right?
Yes, definitely.
And around Labor Day marks, or the Wooden Boat Festival, I would guess.
Yeah. In there. Yeah, right around there, depending on the weather.
Right.
I'll stay open for a little while, or people can call me, and we can make arrangements to go out.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, listen, believe it or not, we're running out of time here.
No.
So one last thing. Now that you've lived here for a while, is there any one thing you could point to that's your favorite thing about the Olympic Peninsula?
The water. For me, it's the water. That's why I'm here. It's so dynamic. Around Point Wilson, everybody says that's the danger zone. That's the danger zone. It can be if you don't know what you're doing.
You got to know what you're doing.
Okay. Yes, you do.
All right. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show, Steve.
Thank you, Marianne.
You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. We profile some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest, Steve, runs PT's Paddle Sports from the fort. Thank you, Steve. And I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson, the man in the glass booth. He's the editor and producer of Our Town. He smooths out all of our errs and stutters and bumps and makes me and my guests sound ever so much more intelligent and eloquent than we really are. I also want to thank Larry Stein, Program Director, Kate Ingram, Station Manager, and Robert Ambrose, Chairman of the Board. All work incredibly hard to grow and sustain this station. I want to thank you, the listener. KPTZ, Port Townsend, is a community radio station. We're all volunteers here. We give our time because we believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need your support, listeners. We need your donations. We're trying to raise enough money to renovate one of the old buildings at Fort Worden to be our new studio. Right now, our world headquarters are in a trailer in the parking lot of the Mountain View School. We think we could do a little bit better. So keep those donations rolling in, folks. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.